From the studios of WFPL in Louisville, this is a news special on the race for Kentucky Secretary of State. I'm Rick Howlett. Our guest today is the Democratic nominee, Allison Lundergan Grimes. Ms. Grimes is an attorney based in Lexington. She faces Republican Bill Johnson in the November general election. Ms. Grimes, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Rick, for having me. Pleasure to be here today.
Good to have you. We also want to welcome those of you listening to WEKU, our Kentucky Public Radio partner station. Our interviewer today is WFPL political editor Philip Bailey, but we also invite your questions and comments. 1-877-814-TALKS, toll free, 877-814-8255. You can email us at news@WFPL.org. Send us a tweet at WFPL News or visit our Facebook page. Now I'll turn it over to my colleague, WFPL political editor Philip Bailey.
Thanks, Rick. Ms. Grimes, how are you doing today?
Thank you, Philip. I'm doing great.
Good to see you. This is Domestic Violence Month, as you may know. You have proposed allowing victims of domestic violence to list the Secretary of State's office as their registration on as their residence on their registration rolls. Why propose that, and how would it work?
Well, I first want to tell your listeners how this even came about. You know, as a practicing business attorney, we try to give back to the community through doing pro bono legal services, and my work was specific to working with victims of domestic violence, helping them in the courtroom obtain the EPOs or DVOs that they would seek so that they could go about their business without fear of harm. And in running for the next Secretary of State of this Commonwealth, one thing I found is as we traveled the state, many people don't realize that your registration, voter registration, which the deadline is tomorrow if you need to register to vote, that is actually of public record. You can go see where what I am registered, where my address is, just like I could see yours. The only thing is that's redacted on that is your Social Security number. And as sitting in the courtroom, one thing I found for these individuals that are victims of domestic violence, people that are seeking to get their voice back, to literally be heard again, they are scared of being a part of the process for fear that that person that they found, sitting in the courtroom next to them will find them on election night at their home. So my proposal is something that would help Kentucky be a leader in the nation in terms of victims of domestic violence, which is to allow them the same opportunity and security that every other Kentuckian has when they go register to vote. And that is that while they would provide their address, it would be redacted by the Secretary of State's office if they have a pending EPO or existing DVO out, so that when they went to go vote on election day, they could have the comfort and security to know, Philip, that that person they saw in the courtroom wouldn't be in their living room that evening.
Now, would the person who has been accused have to be convicted of domestic violence, or you said earlier it would just have to be an EPO? Would that have to be a situation where it was just someone who was accused of the domestic violence or making the accusation?
Well, in many instances, EPOs are only actually viable for a certain period of time until the accused individual can come before the court, have a jurisdiction before the court and be heard. So it would be a certain time period, but I believe a pending EPO or DVO would warrant address confidentiality being respected for individuals within the Commonwealth.
Should other victims of violent crime be exempt from listing their address as well?
Well, I think it's worth exploring. You know, one thing right now that Kentucky is struggling with is increased voter participation. And I think the measures that we can explore to make sure that we are allowing all Kentuckians to feel comfortable to exercise their right to vote, to have their voice heard, to be a part of this process on election day is the better. You know, right now, voter participation in the state, you just heard before we started this session, it's at a low in the primary. And we're looking at an upcoming general election where the struggle and battle has been to engage citizens and let them know how crucial this election is and how we need them to be a part of the process. So I'm open to exploring those ideas and always making sure it's a security measure. At the end of the day, we're not making exceptions in the law. They are indeed providing their address, but we would be redacting it, in essence, just noting the Secretary of State's office so that it would not be available for public record.
One of the issues that has come up during this Secretary of State's race is felon voting rights. You and your opponent, Republican Bill Johnson, obviously differ on this and a number of other issues. Knowing the Secretary of State doesn't have the sole authority to pardon an individual, but I want to ask you, should Kentucky restore voting rights to felons automatically?
Well, something you just pointed out, Philip, is something that most Kentuckians aren't aware of. And in fact, I don't believe my opponent even is aware of that. And that is that here in the state of Kentucky, individuals who are former convicted felons can only obtain their right to vote if they receive executive pardon from our governor. Kentucky is one of four states that still has that application process in place. The Secretary of State cannot unilaterally make any such determinations. In fact, it lies solely in the hands of the General Assembly. And in years past, they have considered such bills to allow restoration of felon rights automatically to be restored once an individual has served their time. I believe, you know, as a practicing business attorney, I believe in our criminal justice system, and I believe that once an individual has paid their debt to society, they should be able to participate in this process and, yes, have their voice heard on Election Day. Obviously, this decision is solely up to our General Assembly, and I will follow the laws that they dictate. That is something that is unique to this office. As Secretary of State, you don't make the law. That's the role of our General Assembly. That's the role of Congress at the federal level. You don't interpret it. That's the role of the judiciary. You simply follow the law as it is written, and what the General Assembly deems appropriate, I will do. But on a personal level, you know, I just have to have faith that once an individual has completed their time, has really attempted to repent, that they should be able to participate as every American citizen should on Election Day.
Are there any crimes that should disqualify a person permanently from regaining their voting rights? I know that's come up before in the debates with you and Mr. Johnson, but are there any laws in particular that you feel that a person has disqualified themselves from participating in the franchise?
Well, you know, I've listened as my opponent has literally on this issue as well, gone from position to position to position, depending on the audience he's in front of. You know, he ran against Rand Paul and dropped out of that election, and there was for restoration of felon rights. In this race, he's attempted to make a distinction between the felonies that people have been convicted of. And I think that is very scary water that you would be treading in. I certainly wouldn't want to disenfranchise anyone or make a distinction or differentiate between crimes because once again, you've paid your debt to society. I think that is the determination that matters in order to make sure you have your voice heard on Election Day.
But what about voter fraud? I mean, that's something that clearly would be a situation in which a person has a history of breaking the rules around one of our more sacred civic institutions. Would voter fraud be necessarily something that would disqualify someone from ever voting again?
Well, you know, again, the sentences that are around that are decided by our General Assembly. That's what our criminal penal code is all about, and that's what our court of law is about. The citizens of the Commonwealth decide when an individual has served their time and what their time should be. That's not up to the Secretary of State. I simply believe on a personal level that we want to have everybody's voice heard, especially those that once they've paid their debts to society.
Currently, the governor is permitted to grant a pardon to restore those civil rights, as you mentioned earlier. What's wrong with the current system, in your view?
I don't know that there's anything wrong with the current system. The executive pardon by the governor is what currently exists. That's what the law is on the books. And if the General Assembly, in their determination, changes the law to provide for automatic restoration of voting rights once you've served your time, that, as Secretary of State, is what I will follow.
We are going to take a break and we'll return in a moment. You're listening to a news special with the Democratic nominee for Kentucky's Secretary of State, Allison Lundergan Grimes, from the studios of WFPL in Louisville.
Support for WFPL comes from Production Simple Concerts and Events, presenting an evening of alternative country, folk, and rock with the Jayhawks in concert with Raylan Baxter, Friday at 8 at the Brown Theater. Tickets at the Kentucky Center box office, kentuckycenter.org, and 584-7777. From PPG Porter Paints, made in Louisville since 1921, serving commercial, industrial, and residential customers for 90 years. With 50 Kentuckiana stores and independent dealers, carrying a wide variety of products, including those that meet or exceed the latest environmental standards, information at ppgporterpaints.com. From Westminster Terrace and Rosanna Hughes Home, part of a not-for-profit, faith-based community dedicated to becoming home to senior adults through compassionate care and service to suit individual needs, from rehabilitation and therapy services to dining and personal assistance, on Bardstown Road, 2 miles south of the Watterson, 499-9383.
This is 89.3 WFPL. Coming up on a Q, a conversation with actor Hugh Jackman. That's at 2.
This is a news special on the race for Kentucky Secretary of State. Today we're talking with Democratic nominee for that office, Allison Lundergan Grimes, and once again, I'll turn it over to WFPL's political editor, Philip Bailey.
Ms. Grimes, you mentioned security measures earlier, and I'd like to know, what is your position on making it mandatory that voters show a photo identification at the polls?
Well, you know, I think it first we should probably start off to let the voters know. Many don't realize what the law is, the current law on the books. While there are many states out there that don't require a photo ID to be produced, 30 in fact, Kentucky is not one of those. Our law, Kentucky Revised Statutes 117.227 is the section, it does require photo ID to be produced or that you be known by the precinct officer. And the identification that's sufficient under our law is your driver's license, a Social Security card, or a credit card. And as I have traveled the state talking with our county clerks who oversee the elections on Election Day, asking them if we do have any problems of people intending to impersonate other individuals, because that is what's at the heart of requiring an individual to produce a photo ID, and that being the only form of identification that's allowed, they've indicated that we don't have any such cases. And my opponent has been out there indicating that if you just Google it, there are cases. But here in Kentucky, we've not had voter fraud cases where people have been intending to impersonate people, but rather it's vote buying. And in a time when, you know, we are trying to make sure government is as small as it can be, I don't think we need to add additional laws on the books when the evidence is simply not there to warrant such additional laws to be added. You know, the National Association for Secretaries of State, they have done studies on this very issue. And while there are states that are out there that have enacted mandatory photo identification laws, they are not states like Kentucky where they already had such laws on the books. Moreover, they found that such laws were being enacted because there was an understanding of a rampant fear of fraud, not necessarily actual evidence to support it. And, you know, as an attorney, I never go before a judge and ask a judge to make a determination when there isn't sufficient law or facts on the books to warrant such a determination. I think that's the case here. You know, if you look at the studies that are out there, they actually show 1 in 11 Kentuckians and Americans, in fact, actually don't have a driver's license. And my grandmothers, both of them were with me on election back in January when I filed my paperwork for this election. One of them is 91 years old. She does not drive, but she has been exercising her right to vote at the same precinct for over 40 years. And yes, the precinct officer knows her, but she goes and produces her Social Security card. I think the intended effect of the measure requiring only a photo ID, a mandatory government-issued purchased ID to be required is in essence the poll tax, Philip, of our time. You know, there was a day when women could only vote if they owned property, if they were married, or if they paid tax. And this is in essence the same thing. It's taking us backwards, not moving us forward. It's disenfranchising many Kentuckians, my grandmother included, who the current laws that are on the books are sufficient. I think those are the laws that we need to be enforcing. I think we need to make sure we're taking this state in the right direction, moving forward, not backwards.
We're talking with Allison Lundergan Grimes, the Democratic nominee for Kentucky Secretary of State. If you have a question or a comment, call us at 1-877-814-TALK. That's 877-814-8255. You can email us at news@wfpl.org. Send us a tweet at WFPL News or visit our Facebook page. And back to Philip Bailey.
Whether there is widespread voter fraud or not, Ms. Grimes, shouldn't there be, though, a higher standard on the franchise as a security measure? You need to show a photo ID for a number of other things.
Well, you know, I've heard, as my opponent has said, this is a common sense security measure. And while I understand that many other activities do require a photo ID, there are many Kentuckians that aren't flying on a day-to-day basis. There are many Kentuckians that aren't out there purchasing cigarettes. There are many Kentuckians, like my grandmother, that simply do not drive at 91 years of age. That does not mean they should not have their voice heard on Election Day. The cost, the time concerning obtaining a government-issued ID, purchasing a government-issued ID. There's a cost associated with that. And there was a hearing just a couple weeks ago in Frankfurt where testimony was provided to show that the estimated cost to make sure that all Kentuckians could obtain such an ID was anywhere from $100,000 to $10 million. Obviously, this is not a one-time purchase. This is, if it would be made a law, it would be something that would go through perpetuity. And I heard on your show just, I guess it was last week, where my opponent said he would pay for this out of his salary as Kentucky's next Secretary of State. That's simply not a logical option given the testimony that is out there. At the end of the day, we want to make sure all Kentuckians have their voice heard on Election Day. The laws that are on the books, Kentucky Revised Statute 117, Section 227, is sufficient. You do have to show identification or be known by the precinct officer. That is then affirmed on voter registration rolls, and the evidence that's there just does not suggest we need to add additional laws, but rather enforce what's currently on Kentucky Revised Statutes.
We have a question from Robert in Lexington on showing the identification at the polls. Hi, Robert. You're on the air with Ms. Grimes.
Yes. Hi, Ms. Grimes. I very much agree with what you're saying on this issue, and it affects me. It seems I would agree with Jesse Jackson, who said this seems to be some kind of a effort to reinstate Jim Crow laws on a financial basis. I'm a disabled Vietnam vet. And due to the income that allowed to me, for several months now, I have not had a photo ID, nor, unless some week between now and the election, I decide to go a couple days without eating, will I be able to get it. It's, I think, in excess here in Lexington of about $20. And which he, I don't know the, I don't believe that I know the precinct officer. Would she have any suggestion as to how I could remedy that?
Well, Robert, right now you are able to vote if you go to the polls on Election Day by showing your driver's license, a credit card, or your Social Security card. And I understand that perhaps due to your service to our country, which I very much appreciate and respect, you may not be driving, but you can show your Social Security card or a credit card, which is sufficient. And I agree with you. This measure, the intended effect, if you will, is to get out the vote in reverse. In other words, to drive people away from the polls on Election Day. And at a time when participation is low, I think we need to make sure we're encouraging people. We're not building barriers to the ballot box. I very much respect your service and want to honor that. There are over 350,000 veterans, Robert, which, as I'm sure you're aware, the fourth largest in the nation, residing right here in Kentucky. Making sure your voice is heard on Election Day is my priority. We have traveled this state talking with many veterans and going to be over in Hardin County with Colonel Weaver here at the end of the week. And one of the measures that I suggest and would like to see implemented as Secretary of State, working with our county clerks, is to make sure that, especially for our veterans, that we have polling locations in our two veterans hospitals and our three veterans nursing homes, so that people like you who have fought for the very right we're exercising on Election Day have your voice heard.
Robert, thanks for your call and for your service. Our number here is 877-814-TALK. That's 877-814-8255.
One area where you and your opponent appear to agree is this issue of independents voting in primaries. Why should Kentucky continue to bar independents from voting in primaries?
Well, I think, Philip, the statement that independents are barred from participating in primaries, that's not actually correct. Independents are able to vote in nonpartisan primaries. They're simply not allowed to vote in partisan issues. But, you know, when mayor's races, referendum issues come up, they're just as myself as a registered Democrat or any registered Republican, they're able to vote. As I've traveled the state, again, talking with our county clerks, one of the goals as Secretary of State is you're the chief advocate for increasing voter participation. And as I've talked with our county clerks, one of the things that I have found and discovered in our travels and discussions is that people don't often realize, one, if they are registered, or two, the effect of their registration. And I think the whole notion of being registered as an independent is that you're not affiliated with a partisanship. You're not affiliated with a Democrat side or Republican side, but rather independent side. And I believe the missed opportunity across this state, from Boone, Kitten, and Campbell up in the northern part of the state all the way over to Pike and Floyd to our river counties, is making sure that whether you're a Democrat or Republican or independent, when you're registering to vote, you understand the impact of that registration. And that is that if you want to not be affiliated with either political party, Republicans or Democrats, that you understand as an independent, the effect of that is that you would not be able to vote in those partisan races.
But wouldn't that improve voter turnout in the primary? This past primary here in Kentucky was about 10.4%. Wouldn't that help as far as civics and getting people out to vote if we allowed independents to vote in primaries?
Well, I think that, again, the whole notion behind choosing to be an independent is that you want to play your own ball game. You don't want to be associated with the Democrat side. You don't want to be associated with the Republican side. And to use an analogy that my husband often dislikes, it would be like, Coach Cal coming here to tell Coach Pitino what players to pick and put in a game, at certain times. And I think that would be the same analogy can apply for independents. I don't think independents want to be telling the Democratic Party who their candidate or candidates should be in their primaries, or likewise with Republicans. The most important thing, as we just heard from Robert, someone who has served this Commonwealth in our country, is to make sure that people are exercising their voice on Election Day and that they're registered to vote. And obviously encourage everybody, if you are not registered, the listeners today, if you are not registered to vote, tomorrow is the deadline. Go out and register. And regardless of what affiliation you choose, Democrat, Republican, or independent, realize having your voice heard is most important. The most important thing I think you can do as an American citizen.
We have another take on voter ID. This is Steve in Louisville. Hi, Steve. You're on with Myth Grimes.
Yeah, I just can't disagree with you more on this issue. Do you know how easy it is to obtain a fraudulent credit card, or even grabbing your sister's or your brother's or your friend's Social Security card and claiming you're them? And you know that if you ride a bus in Louisville, especially to get a fare for the disabled, you're supposed to show a picture ID card. State ID cards are $8 to $12. And that, to me, is a small price to pay to make sure that we don't have people voting fraudulently. I would like to get your response to that.
Thank you, Steve.
Steve, I appreciate your call, and thank you for being engaged and a part of this process. As I indicated earlier, to be motivated to add additional laws on our books simply out of a fear of fraud, I think would be taking the state backwards, not forwards. As a practicing attorney, there have to be specific facts and cases on the books to warrant adding additional laws that would, in essence, I think, build barriers to our ballot box. Yes, as you just pointed out, there is a fee associated with going to get to purchase your government-issued ID. There's also a time period, because to get that government-issued ID, you've got to have your Social Security card. You've got to have the proper, pertinent documentation. And in this day and age, without such sufficient cases warranting or suggesting that we have individuals attempting to impersonate other individuals at the ballot box, I don't think we add additional laws to our books. I think we simply enforce what is already there.
All right, Steve, thanks for your call. Let's go back to the phones and to Brian in Louisville. Hi, Brian, you're on with Ms. Grimes.
Hello. The Secretary of State has an important role for businesses in the Commonwealth, as well as businesses that want to locate in Kentucky, and I'd like to hear how Mrs. Grimes will be effective as Secretary of State in the area of job creation.
Brian, thank you very much for your call. As we've traveled this state, we first began on a listening tour where we developed our Grimes goals, and several of those goals are related to job creation, growing our economy. Many people don't realize the Secretary of State is the first face that all businesses, whether domestic or foreign, see when operating here in the state and attempting to do business. And I believe we have to have somebody at the head of this office that not only understands the laws inside and out about voting and elections, but most importantly, business. And as a practicing business attorney, I know the concerns and struggles that are on individuals' mind when they come here and want to create jobs. I think we have to have a Secretary of State that is interested in growing our economy, and at the end of the day, giving the green light to the small businesses, the nonprofits that have kept us going. And my proposal for that, Brian, is we've put forward a detailed action plan, Allison's action plan. I think we do that by first updating our laws so that we have the most competitive laws that are on the books. Our nonprofit statutes are just a prime example. They're over not one decade, but two decades old. So we have people wanting to do charitable work going across our borders instead of coming here to Kentucky. The second option I believe that we pursue is making sure we're streamlining the process so that we are really cutting the red tape so that businesses can go about doing their work instead of communicating with state government. And I think Senate Bill 8, which was just passed in the last session, is a real opportunity to move this forward, to cut down steps that are often two steps into one, to make sure we are automating and using technology to its fullest advantage. And the third item that I believe in our action plan that can help us make sure we're growing our economy, creating jobs, is education. You know, as we have traveled this state, we have had over three business roundtable sessions in the western part of the state, in Christian and Bowling Green and Callaway, talking about the things that are going right there. And we are going to be having tomorrow over in the northeastern part of the state, in Boyd and Rowan, additional job roundtables, talking about the things that are going right there and trying to translate that across this Commonwealth. But I also believe we can start and should start a program that I've titled Kentucky First. And that's educating our small businesses, the businesses throughout the state, on their ability to obtain state contracts so that we are keeping our state dollars as best as possible here in the state instead of going to out-of-state contractors.
All right, Brian, thanks for your call. Philip?
Critics and observers have, though, they pointed out this issue of job creation, and the question has come up, are you planning a future run for governor?
Well, you know, I was just on Ryan Alessi, Philip, I guess it was last week, and he asked that same question, quoting me from primary election night, where I said I would love to follow in the shoes of Governor Martha Lynn Collins, a mentor of mine, someone who I'm proud to have helping and supporting me in this race. And my reference there and comments to you is that, you know, I believe she was a leader in creating jobs, a leader in laying the foundation so that people all across the United States knew that Kentucky is open for business. She was a leader in making sure we are putting our citizens first. And as Kentucky's Secretary of State, that is my priority. You know, unlike my opponent who ran against Rand Paul and dropped out, thought about running for governor, and then chose this race, this has been and is my priority because I believe with my background, Philip, I'm well suited to help move Kentucky and the state forward. I know the laws inside and out about voting, elections, and business. I have worked with this office for many years. And most importantly, we have a plan, our Grimes goals, our detailed Allison's action plan about how we're going to help create jobs and move the state in the right direction. And I think now more than ever, Kentuckians want a leader that is not empty sound bites, that is not the scare tactics that you see from my opponent, the extreme positions that are that the facts, his rhetoric just don't match the facts. They want a leader that has sound solutions, and that is what our campaign is about.
Got about a minute left.
But then why run on the economy? I guess my real question is that you've been rumored to be at least someone who's a future leader in the Democratic Party, and it seems that the economy is certainly important to you. Why are you running on the economy so heavily for Secretary of State if you don't have any future plans to run for governor?
Well, I think right now we have to have all hands on deck. And as the only woman on our Democratic ticket, I'm very proud to be a part of this ticket. But I think we have to realize that the main concern, the pressing concerns for all Kentuckians across this Commonwealth is not only making sure they have their voice heard on Election Day, but a responsibility of this office is as it relates to business. And I will do and do have plans of how we can help make sure we're moving in the right direction. So we're putting our citizens first, our businesses first, that we're encouraging and recruiting other businesses to come here to the state. And at the end of the day, people know Kentucky is open for business because that's what's going to keep us moving in the right direction.
And that's going to have to be the last word. Allison Lundergan-Grimes, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
This news special was produced by the staff of WFPL in Louisville. Our production team is led by Laura Ellis and Brad Yost. You can hear this program and interviews with other nominees for Kentucky constitutional offices at WFPL.org. For Philip Bailey, I'm Rick Howlett. Thanks for listening.